ओम ज्ञानतम इनन्दस्या जनजनासलकया चक्षुसन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्री चैतन्य मनोवीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददति सपन्दनिकम्. The battle continues. The demons, being quite disturbed that the demigods had obtained the nectar despite their hard work, and they received not even one drop of nectar, they attacked the demigods. And after the battle going this way and that, and the demons using their mystic tricks, or Bali Maharaj using mystic powers to cause the demigods so much grief, finally Indra, actually by the Lord's grace, the demigods didn't know what to do, so they took shelter of the Lord. He came, and when the Lord is there, Krishna Surya Sam, just like the when the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. So illusion cannot be present in the face of the Lord. So also in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, not only is the Lord sufficient to drive away illusion, but also describes how the Lord's holy name, which is none different from the Lord, which is the same as the Lord, is also sufficient to drive away all illusion. So that in and of itself perhaps is the greatest gift of miserable Kali Yuga. There's so much illusion that the only way to stay free from it is basically to constantly chant Krishna's names, and then there won't be any illusion. But if one doesn't do that, one will be an illusion, and one will pay the price of being an illusion. And that's the struggle that most people, most aspiring devotees, find themselves in Kali Yuga. Don't have the ability to stay always in the light of the holy names and of Krishna's service and the Krishna sun, but yet don't want to stay in the darkness either. So something like going back and forth, when the darkness becomes too torturous, we take shelter of Krishna deeply, and then the light goes on. But when the light has been on for a while, we sort of drift back into the realm of shadows again. But this is really the methodology. Kirtaniya Sadahari. Sadahari. Continuous, always. Taking shelter of Krishna by chanting his names. So in any case, when Indra became furious at Bali Maharaj for using... because as we heard, the fighting took place between equals. Those with lances fought with other people of lances. Those who were on elephants fought with others on elephants. So the use of the mystic powers, it didn't seem to be quite appropriate from the Kshatriya point of view. And Indra was furious, and then he used his Vajra, which in itself was an undefeatable weapon. And he said to Bali Maharaj, "Prepare to die, you rascal, prepare to die." And Bali Maharaj, as we heard yesterday, this is in chapter 11 of the 8th canto, he said, anyway, everyone on this battlefield is under the influence of time. And according to time, one has to meet one's destiny. So... if my destiny is fame, I'll become famous. If my destiny is to die, I'll die. If my destiny is to become victorious, I'll be victorious. All under the influence of time. So this was a fearless comment made by Bali Maharaj, and Prabhupada commented in his purport that this is because Bali Maharaj had truly the spirit of a Kshatriya. Now in the next verse, text 8. Seeing the movements of time, those who are cognizant of the real truth neither rejoice nor lament for different circumstances. What do they see it as? This is just my fate. Therefore, because you are jubilant due to your victory, you should be considered not very learned. So you are not being steady, Bali Maharaj accused Indra. You became morose when it seemed that you were being defeated, and now you're feeling jubilant because you're going to be victorious. But it actually isn't you who's doing these things at all. This is just, there are five factors of action mentioned in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And ultimately, the ultimate factor that sanctions and determines what's going on is the supersoul. But karma, the endeavor, the chasta, the time, place, these are all factors, but ultimately it's the supersoul. So if one becomes jubilant when things are going the way he prefers and miserable when things aren't going the way he prefers, his life will be a roller coaster. The alternative is to fix one's mind on a deeper principle, not on happiness and distress, but a deeper principle of dutiful action and then detachment from the result. So sometimes people who don't understand the mood that the Bhagavad Gita or very much the Vedic culture is in, they see it as very deterministic, that everything is predestined, therefore there's no impetus to proper action and to ambition and to better oneself. So that's somewhat true, but that's a typical criticism. But that's somewhat true, and it's somewhat not true, and it's more not true than true, because the criticism is meant to show that the society must be inactive, full of people saying, well, whatever my fate's going to be, that's going to happen, so I might as well not do anything. And how can a society be prosperous and even get the material necessities of life if people are thinking there's no need to act? What's the difference? The results are going to come anyway. But actually, the part that's usually missed is that everyone does their duty according to their position in life. Whether one is a worker or a warrior or a businessman or an intellectual, one does one's duty properly. So the work is going on, but there's not an insane attachment to the fruit of the work, to the success or to the failure. Insane attachment, because if one becomes attached to things going a specific way, and yet whether it goes that way is really out of our control, because there are five factors in action, not just chasta. Chasta means endeavor, the work. So there's five factors in action, not just one factor in action. And the way that the contemporary mythology is that if you work hard enough, or if you even it's even more subtle than that, if your desire is enough, they even have people visualizing the success and everything. If it's just them who's going to make the success occur, and actually, they get into some subtle in the contemporary philosophies that go around. They get into a subtle variation of the truth, and what the philosophy is: if you desire something strongly, the universe reciprocates with that desire. They consider the universe like an organism, which is one of the levels of God realization mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. The universe is actually like an organism, a closed organism, and as one reacts with that organism, the organism reacts with with that person. That's the law of karma. But it's not just desiring, it's also deserving. Desiring and deserving. And one's success doesn't come automatically by the result of one's desiring or one's work, but ultimately it comes as a result of Krishna's sanctioning, which comes as a result of one's piety. That point of pious action is not looked at squarely. Success comes from piety, from punya, even on the material level, on the bhakti level also. On every level, success comes from piety. And therefore, I'm following what Krishna explains in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that if one wants to be successful in Krishna consciousness, one needs a particular type of sukriti or piety, Krishna or bhakti unmutta, amukya sukriti. And that comes how? By pleasing Krishna and pleasing Guru and Krishna. So therefore Prabhupada recommended preaching so much, because that's what Krishna says. There will never be one more dear to me than one who preaches. And that's pleasing Krishna. And therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that kirtan is 100 times better than japa. Because by kirtan, sankirtan, loud chanting of Krishna's name, so many other living entities are benefited by hearing Krishna's names. So by preaching, that's why the emphasis on preaching, to give us qualification whilst we have very little of our own. We have very little punya. We have very little spiritual piety. And on the other hand, we have so many other tendencies which aren't of the highest order. So therefore preaching is very important, because success ultimately comes from blessings, especially in Krishna consciousness, but in all respects. So therefore, in one of the previous verses, the verse said, and the purport also said, Prabhupada also explained, that if one wants to achieve what one doesn't deserve by mechanical means, building the proverbial staircase to heaven without becoming qualified to go to heaven, as Indra was accusing Bali Maharaj, the result is that one goes downward, because one's not qualified to be in that position. So even if one seemingly achieves that position, he cannot maintain it, and the result is that he goes downward. So therefore in the Vedic culture, there was an acceptance of one's position, although one did one's duty, and a detachment from the results, and at the same time an attempt to increase one's piety through scriptural actions. So one, even if one was a materialist, would go up, and that brings an auspicious atmosphere, and on the material level even, and that brings a happy atmosphere. And when there's Vedic, when things are done according to the Vedic system, or even a house according to the Vastu Shastra, the Silpa Shastra, there is an auspiciousness that comes. And you see this even when, if as soon as you walk to a place where the kirtan is going on, or Vaishnava Homa, fire sacrifice is going on, the atmosphere has a surcharging of auspiciousness, or just walking into the Dham, a holy place, a temple. The atmosphere has an auspiciousness because things are aligned with Krishna and Krishna's desire. So Indra was accused by Bali Maharaj of not being very learned because of his jubilation due to his current situation of victory. And later on, we see And that will happen, we'll hear later on, starting when another pastime comes, in starting in chapter 15, where the demons actually gain control over heaven, the heavenly kingdom, because of their piety. They increase their piety. So if one thinks it's just me, one is an illusion. Prabhupada's purport. Balaimaraj knew that Indra, king of heaven, was extremely powerful, certainly more powerful than he himself. Nonetheless, Balaimaraj challenged Indra by saying that Indra was not a very learned person. In Bhagavad Gita 2.11, Krishna rebuked Arjuna by saying, Asochan anvasochas tvam pragyavaram strabhasase gatasuna gatasuns cha nanu sochanti pandita. While speaking learned words, O Arjuna, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Thus, as Krishna challenged Arjuna by saying that he was not a pandita, a learned person, Balaimaraj also challenged King Indra and his associates. In this material world, everything happens under the influence of time. Consequently, for a learned person who sees how things are taking place, there's no question of being sorry or happy because of the waves of material nature. It's just the influence of time. After all, since we're all being carried away by these waves, what is the meaning of being jubilant or morose? Just like if you're in the ocean and there's waves sometimes, there's always choppiness, generally some choppiness in the ocean. And sometimes a little wave may lift you upward, and then in another wave you may be dipped down a bit. So if every time you go a little bit upward you feel happy, then every time you go out you're dipped down, you feel misery. So misery, happy, happy, misery. Life becomes miserable just by the constant flux of the moods of the caused by the changes. So one who is conversant with the laws of nature is never jubilant or morose because of nature's activities. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna advises that one be tolerant. Tams tatikshasva bharata. Following this advice of Krishna, one should not be morose or unhappy because of circumstantial changes. That is a symptom of a devotee. That is the external symptom of a devotee. That's called the tatastha lakshana, the external symptom. The primary symptom, or the sarupa lakshana, is his attachment to Krishna. And that, the attachment to Krishna, allows one detachment from matter. To try to be detached from matter without attachment to Krishna is very, very, not only difficult, but it's ultimately fruitless in and of itself. Param drishtva narvatate visya vinivartante nirarasya deyana rasobha jamra sukasya param drishtva narvatate. That is the process of detachment. Higher taste of attachment to Krishna. Following this advice, Prabhupada's purport continues, this advice of Krishna is tamas tatikshasva bharata, one should not be morose or unhappy because of circumstantial changes. This is the symptom of a devotee. A devotee carries out his duty in Krishna consciousness and is never unhappy in awkward circumstances. He has full faith that in such circumstances, Krishna protects his devotee. Therefore, a devotee never deviates from his prescribed duty of devotional service, the dutifulness. The material qualities of jubilation and moroseness are present even in the demigods, who are very highly situated in the upper planetary system. Therefore, when one is undisturbed by the so-called favorable and unfavorable circumstances of this material world, he should be understood to be Brahma-bhuta, or self-realized, above. And what does that verse say? Nasochati nakanksiti, doesn't lament, nor is he jubilant in the material world. And how? Is due to continuous mam chayo vibhacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan. By being continuously performing devotional service, sagunan, the modes of material nature. He transcends those modes due to his attachment to Krishna. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, and achieves the Brahma platform. So a person who is steady and undisturbed in this means that's the external symptom, because the attachment to Krishna is not observable, but the external steadiness may be observable. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasojati Nakanchati, one who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. When one is undisturbed by material circumstances, he should be understood to be on the transcendental stage, above the reactions of the three modes of material nature. Basically liberation. It's basically the platform of nishtha. Bali Maharaj continued, "You demigods think that because your own selves are the cause of your attaining fame and victory, So devotees, of course, have to be very careful of thinking that about their successes and also about their failures. But it's better to think like that somewhat about your failures and the successes, because pride goeth before the fall. Because of your ignorance," Bali Maharaj continues, "saintly persons feel sorry for you. Therefore, although your words afflict the heart, we do not accept them." Sukadeva Goswami said, after thus rebuking Indra, king of heaven, with sharp words, Bali Maharaj, who could subdue any other hero, drew back to his ear the arrow known as Nirachas and attacked Indra with these arrows. Then he again chastised Indra with strong words. Since Bali Maharaj's rebukes were truthful, King Indra did not at all become sorry, just as an elephant beaten by its driver's rod does not become agitated. He accepts it as deserves. So that's Indra's nobility. When Indra, the defeater of enemies, released his infallible thunderbolt scepter at Bali Maharaj with a desire to kill him, Bali Maharaj indeed fell to the ground with his aeroplane, like a mountain with its wings cut off. Prabhupada's purport. In many descriptions in Vedic literature, it is found that mountains also fly in the sky with wings. When such mountains are dead, they fall to the ground, where they stay as very large dead bodies. Actually, when he last visited the United States in 1976, he went on one of the devotees, one of the Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party buses from New York to Gita Nagari, the farm in Pennsylvania. And at one point he commented that this pointed a particular big hill, and he said this used to be a flying one. You have seen? No, I also have not. But I've seen the one that used to be a flying one.
Does it look different?
Huh?
Does it look different?
Not different enough for me not to forget which one it was after I was told that was the one. When the demon Jambasura saw that his friend Bali had fallen, he appeared before Indra, the enemy, just to serve Bali Maharaj with friendly behavior. The greatly powerful Jambasura, carried by a lion, approached Indra and forcibly struck him on the shoulder with his club. He also struck Indra's elephant. Being beaten by Jambasura's club, Indra's elephant was confused and aggrieved. Thus it touched its knees to the ground and fell unconscious. Thereafter, Matali, Indra's chariot driver, brought Indra's chariot, which was drawn by 1,000 horses. Indra then left his elephant and got onto the chariot. Appreciating Matali's service, Jambasura, the best of the demons, smiled. Nonetheless, he struck Matali in the battle with a trident of blazing fire. It's very hard for us who believe that reality is just or is limited to what we can see, to look at these things as if they're not some type of mythological stories. But mythological, because in contemporary, even in contemporary studies, academic studies, when something is said to be mythological, it doesn't mean that it's not untrue. But just on one level, it's mythological. Well, it may be true. Just like there was something of mythological proportions of that plane. It was symbolic. Mythological meaning symbolic of the plane hitting the World Trade Center. It was more than just a plane hitting an object. There was something that challenged one's concept of reality about it. Something of symbolic importance. So we tend to think that because we accept only what we can see as reality, we tend to think like that in what we've seen. We tend to think the things that are outside of that experience really didn't happen. But that is actually a very limited concept of reality. Very, very, very limited concept of reality. And so much exists that we can't explain just by what we see. Even, there's so many people who've seen ghosts and things like that. And a person who's a strict materialist, meaning the technical definition of a materialist is one who believes what he can see. And if, basically, the way the scientists look at things, they only accept what they can see. The scientific methodology. But there's so many things that can't be explained. So many people have had experiences, so many things that have happened, and even in our own lives probably we've had experience that can't be explained away straight by the scientific methodology way of, by logic and theory like that. Synchronicity, the way that things happen, they seem to sometimes, everything just clicks and fits together in such a way that it couldn't just be just chance. That happens so often, and it's practically Krishna saying that there's giving you a hint that there's a higher power controlling things. So although these things are definitely, many of these things are not within our experience, and it challenges at least my tendency to think, oh, how could this possibly be true? But yet I do personally, also, there's the authority of the Bhagavatam and the Acharyas and Prabhupada. When Prabhupada sometimes was confronted by people saying that these things, how could these be true? His answer is, the Acharyas have accepted them. This was the answer I've heard more than any other. The Acharyas have accepted these things as true. Do you think they are fools? Materialists look at the deity and they'll say, how could the deity be God? Prabhupada's reply, you know, it's just, everyone can see the deity is made out of brass. Yes, the deity is made out of brass, but the deity isn't only brass. So Prabhupada's reply, when people would hint at that, how is this God? This is just some type of superstition or mythological belief. He'd say, do you think that there's hundreds of millions of people who worship the deity and are getting some result from, you think they're all fools and fooling themselves? Imagining it? Hundreds of millions of people like that? Just imagining that they're getting some reciprocation from God in this way? The great Acharyas accepted the deity, they accepted the Bhagavatam, Mahaprabhu. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanamalam, the spotless proof. The methodology by which other things are proved, other truths are derived from this truth. I think they're all fools, these most intelligent people. They live such pure lives, so incredibly intelligent. They're not realizing anything. They're not getting direction from the Bhagavatam. And they accept it. So in the arrogance of our own culture, thinking that everyone else is primitive except for us. There's a tendency to think in that way, but actually it is just really an arrogance. It is not more than that. For Prabhupada was so, when dealing with the Westerners, even his own disciples, he was very strong. You have to crack that intellectual arrogance. Otherwise, that full faith in the way that the scientific methodological way that we were brought up as in perceiving reality and that being all in all is very deep. So Prabhupada had to challenge that and crack it so that persons could become Krishna conscious. Although the pain was extremely severe, Matali tolerated it with great patience. He was hit by the club, or the trident rather, of Jambasura. Indra, however, became extremely angry at Jambasura. He struck Jambasura with his thunderbolt and thus severed his head from his body. When Narada Rishi informed Jambasura's friend and relatives that Jambasura had been killed, so Narada Muni, he said, this seems to be his great pleasure. Hey, do you know what just happened? Indra just killed your best friend. Are you going to let him do that? And he practically causes the leelas to happen, and then he just plays his veena and just Radhika Raman. So the three demons named the Muchi, Bala, and Paka arrived on the battlefield in great haste, rebuking Indra with harsh, cruel words that were piercing to the heart. These demons showered him with arrows, just as torrents of rain wash a great mountain. Quickly handling the situation on the battlefield, the demon Bala put all of Indra's 1,000 horses into tribulations by simultaneously piercing them with an equal number of arrows. So we can say, how is that possible? How long does it take to shoot one arrow? Okay, you have to take it out of your quiver, and even if you're fast, so at least 2 seconds. So 2 seconds times 1,000 is 2,000. 2,000 divided by 60 is how many minutes do we get? No, you're the one. You're the so many so many minutes. What's Indra doing? Just waiting over there during that whole time? No, but these people were very, very, very powerful. And their abilities were beyond what we can imagine. Now we do everything by machines. You can, if someone 200 years ago said, there's a way that you can talk to someone thousands of miles away, everyone would go, oh, crazy, burn him at the stake. You'll be able to sit down and go 100 miles in 1 hour. Oh, crazy, burn him on the stake, cut off his head, crazy man, fanatic. We will be able to fly. Yeah, this is what a, for the birds, kind of thinking. So in any way, he killed the horses. Paka, another demon, attacked both the chariot with all its paraphernalia and the chariot driver, Matili, by fitting 200 arrows to his bow and releasing them all simultaneously. This was indeed a wonderful act on the battlefield. Then Namuchi, another demon, attacked Indra and injured him with 15 very powerful golden feathered arrows, which roared like a cloud full of water. Other demons covered Indra along with his chariot and chariot driver with incessant shower of arrows, just as clouds cover the sun in the rainy season. The demigods, being severely oppressed by their enemies and being unable to see Indra on the battlefield, were very anxious. They covered him. They literally covered him with arrows, like we're covered when we go inside a house or something like that. They made a cage out of arrows so no one could see him. And all the demigods, because he was the hero, the most powerful, the leader, they became frightened. They began lamenting. Having no captain or leader, they're anxious. They became lamenting like traders in a wrecked vessel in the midst of the ocean. Purport. From this statement, it appears that in the upper planetary system there is shipping, and that traders there engage in navigation as their occupational duty. Sometimes, as on this planet, these traders are shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean. It appears that even in the upper planetary system, such calamities occasionally take place. The upper planetary systems in the creation of the Lord are certainly not vacant or devoid of living entities. From Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that every planet is full of living entities, just as Earth is. There's no reason to accept that on other planetary systems there are no living beings. Thereafter, Indra released himself from the cage of the network of arrows, appearing with his chariot, flag, horses, and chariot driver, and thus pleasing the sky, the earth, and all directions. He shone effulgent like the sun at the end of night. Indra was bright and beautiful in the vision of everyone. What color is the sun at the end of night? Or the other way to look at it is at the very beginning of the morning. What color is the sun when it just rises?
Very orange.
Yeah, very wonderful color. That's called Aruna. Very beautiful. Very good for the eyes to see that. When Indra, who is known as Vajradhara, the holder or the carrier of the thunderbolt, saw his own soldiers so oppressed by the enemies on the battlefield, he became very angry. So notice how everyone is becoming, when you're about to attack the enemy, you become angry, because you can't fight unless you're angry. So it's part of the Kshatriya spirit is becoming angry, and therefore, because it's the tendency is passion. Kshatriyas need some passion. A lot of passion. Because when one's angry, one doesn't care about anything. Danger, anything. One just is very focused. It's like a reflection, a perversion of goodness. In goodness, one becomes focused by purity. And in passion, one becomes focused by anger. Well, that's, and ignorance. So he became angry, thus he took up his thunderbolt to kill the enemies, or King Pricket. King Indra used his thunderbolt to cut off the heads of both Bala and Pak and the presence of all their relatives and followers. In this way he created a very fearful atmosphere on the battlefield. O King, when Namuchi, another demon, saw the killing of both Bala and Pak, he was full of grief and lamentation. Thus he angrily made a great attempt to kill Indra. Being angry and roaring like a lion, the demon Namuchi, and see how it goes back and forth. Sometimes one side is victorious, sometimes the other side is victorious, challenging, angry, rebuking, losing, winning, getting killed, getting wounded, victorious. This is the way of battle, and this is the way of life. It's unavoidable due to the time factor. So Namuchi, being angry and roaring like a lion, he took up a steel spear which was bound with bells and decorated with ornaments of gold. He loudly cried, because the loud crying also is meant to strike fear in the heart of the enemy. He cried, roaring like a lion, "Now you are killed." Thus coming before Indra to kill him, Namuchi released his weapon. O King, when Indra, King of Heaven, saw this very powerful spear falling toward the ground like a blazing meteor, he immediately cut it to pieces with his arrows. Then, being very angry, he's also angry, he struck Namuchi's shoulder with his thunderbolt to cut off Namuchi's head. Although King Indra hurled his thunderbolt at Namuchi with great force, it could not even pierce his skin. It is very wonderful that the famed thunderbolt that had pierced the body of Dhritarashtra could not even slightly injure the skin of Namuchi's neck. So what happens when your ultimate weapon that you have full confidence in fails you? And your enemy is attacking you. When Indra saw the thunderbolt return from the enemy, he was very much afraid. He began to wonder whether this had happened because of some miraculous superior power. Prabhupada's purport. Indra's thunderbolt is invincible, and therefore when Indra saw that it had returned without doing any injury to Namuchi, he was certainly very much afraid. 34. Indra thought, formerly when many mountains flying the sky with wings would fall to the ground and kill people, I cut their wings with this same thunderbolt. Vichasur was the essence of the austerities undergone by Tvasta, yet the thunderbolt killed him. Indeed, not only he, but also many other stalwart heroes, whose very skin could not be injured even by all kinds of weapons, were killed by the same thunderbolt. But now, although the same thunderbolt has been released against a less important demon, Muchi wasn't as great as Vichasura or others, it has been ineffectual. Therefore, although it was as good as a Brahmastra, it has now become useless like an ordinary rod. I shall therefore hold it no longer. I can no longer have confidence in it. I wanted to get rid of it. Sukadeva Goswami continued. While the morose Indra was lamenting in this way, an ominous, unembodied voice said from the sky, "This demon, Namuchi, is not to be annihilated by anything dry or moist." The voice also said, "O Indra, because I have given this demon the benediction that he will never be killed by any weapon that is dry or moist, you have to think of another way to kill him." On hearing the ominous voice, and there's no mention of who was behind the voice, the person behind the voice, but in any case, ultimately we know who's behind the voice. Ultimately. Whether it's directly or indirectly, it's Krishna protecting his devotee. So after hearing the ominous voice, Indra with great attention began to meditate on how to kill the demon. He then saw that foam would be the means, for it is neither dry nor moist, or moist nor dry, as the verse says here. Thus Indra, king of heaven, severed Namuchi's head with a weapon of foam, which was neither dry nor moist. Then all the sages satisfied Indra, the exalted personality, by showering flowers and garlands upon him, almost covering him. Purport. In this regard, the Shruti mantras say, "Apam fenena Namuche shira Indro adharayat." Indra killed Namuchi with watery foam, which is neither moist nor dry. Text 41. Vishvavasu and Paravasu, the two chiefs of the Gandharvas, sang in great happiness. The kettle drums of the demigods sounded, and the apsaras danced in jubilation. Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other demigods began killing the demons who opposed them, just as lions killed deer in a forest. O king, when Lord Brahma saw the imminent total annihilation of the demons, he sent a message with Narada, who went before the demigods to make them stop fighting. The great Narada said, the great sage Narada said, "All of you demigods," he is acting as the messenger of Lord Brahma, "are protected by the arms of Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by his grace, you have gotten the nectar. By the grace of the goddess of fortune, you are glorious in every way. Therefore, please stop this fight." Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, accepting the words of Narada, the demigods gave up their anger and stopped fighting. Being praised by their followers, they returned to their heavenly planets. Following the order of Narada Muni, whatever demons remained on the battlefield took Balimar. So Narada is continuing, because the battle had been stopped, but because of the specific enmity that demigods and demons always have, it was stopped. The battle was stopped and won by the demigods, but the war was not over. So Narada Muni instructed whatever demons remaining on the battlefield, they took Bali Maharaj, who was in a precarious condition, to the hill known as Astagiri. And there in that hill, Sukhacharya brought to life all the dead demoniac soldiers who had not lost their heads, trunks, and limbs. He achieved this by his own mantra known as Sanjivani. Has the potency to bring the dead back to life. Bali Maharaj was very experienced in universal affairs. When he regained his senses and memory by the grace of Sukhacharya, he could understand everything that had happened. Therefore, although he had been defeated, he did not lament. Purport, and this is the final verse and purport in this chapter. It is significant that Bali Maharaj is here said to be very experienced. Although defeated, he was not at all sorry, for he knew that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since he was a devotee, he accepted his defeat without lamentation. As stated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Bhagavad Gita 2:47, Karmani eva dikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. Everyone in Krishna consciousness should execute his duty without regard for victory or defeat. One must execute his duty as ordered by Krishna or his representative, the spiritual master. Anakulena Krishna Nashilanam Bhakti Uttama. In first class devotional service, one always abides by the orders and will of Krishna. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 11th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled King Indra Annihilates the Demons. Now in chapter 12, 13, there is, and especially in 12, there will be the pastime of the Mohini Murti incarnation. Returns again on the request of Lord Shiva. And then in 13, there will be description of future manus, and interestingly enough, in chapter 14, it's the system of universal management, and then 15, Bali Maharaj again conquers the heavenly planets. So down but not out. Down to come up again, because that is the nature of life. So what to do in this case? The pastime of Bali Maharaj will teach us. Srimad Bhagavatam, Jai. Srila Prabhupada. Questions, comments?
Unfair that heavenly vices should be helping the demigods and not helping the demons.
So how would you like things to be organized? What's your plan?
I'm making an observation.
Which side are you on, Kanki?
Me?
He's on no one's side, everyone else. He's equal to everyone.
So the demons are also part of the same creation. They are large sons as good as others are. But somehow or other, they are always oppressed by the heavenly powers.
What's that system called in India? The reservation system, right? There should be a reservation. Is that what's called, the reservation?
No,
so demons can also... Is that what it, isn't it called? So demons also get spots in government positions and universities.
Yeah, this is
we're going to get into Indian politics now. But look, I'll answer your question very simply. That this same question was also asked by Purkit Maharaj in the very beginning of the 7th canto, after Krishna seemingly sided with Indra again against Vritrasura and the demons. And the answer that Sukadev Goswami gave. He began telling about Yudhisthira and Narada Muni speaking just after the Rajasuya sacrifice, when Yudhisthira observed that Shishupal's head was cut off and his soul merged in with Krishna's body. So he was wondering how a demon could attain this exalted position of merging with the body of Krishna. And Narada Muni ended up telling him the pastime of Hiranyakashipu and dealing with Prahlad and how Hiranyakashipu was killed by the Lord. And that was the first 10 chapters of chapter 2 through chapter 10 of the 7th canto. And the conclusion was that it may appear that Krishna is giving blessings to one side and is giving harm to the other side. But actually, everything that Krishna does benefits everyone that he does it to. You like that? But it's deep. On the surface, one thing may be going on. But actually, ultimately, as Krishna explained to, as Narada explained to Yudhisthira, ultimately, Hiranyakashipu seemed to be the object of the anger of Lord Nrisingadev, of God, of the Lord, of Krishna. And on one level, he certainly was. But on another level, look what happened. It was the process of him going back to Godhead. Back to Godhead. So everything that Krishna does is always good. And for instance, in the battle of Kurukshetra, he sided with Arjuna. But all those who were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra because Krishna was present, they attained liberation. So exactly what is going on is very hard to see below the surface, how Krishna is favoring everyone. You would like the writer to evoke the right of response. Then we should just accept, because that's the ultimate issue. Because otherwise, that's what Maharaj Prickett said. Otherwise, he appears childish. He favors somebody like a child. He likes this one today, and then he doesn't like this one. Well, Vritrasura itself, that was what was going on at the end of the Vritrasura pastime. Krishna clearly took the side of Indra on one level. And the same thing is really going to be shown more directly than anywhere else in the pastime of Bali Maharaj. Who is Krishna really favoring? And that's what happened with, is he favoring Indra or is he favoring Bali Maharaj? Is he favoring Indra by taking everything from Bali Maharaj and giving it to Indra? Or is he favoring Bali Maharaj actually he became the servant of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj, by his surrender, he purchased Lord Vamadeva. So who is actually being favored?
Also like that in the story of Jani and Jani. With the Kumaras and Jani.
Yeah, that's what the Kumaras said. They said, we can't...
He said, your words, you're
apologizing to us. We can't actually figure out what, if you're pleased with us or unpleased with us or what. So very, very, actually Krishna consciousness in that way is very, very deep. And the opposite of deep is superficial. So when one wants to look at things on the surface level, superficial means the surface level, it's understandable, it's not understandable. But when one trusts patiently and receive. Look at the whole Mahabharata. The Pandavas appeared to be losing. At every point, they were losing, being taken advantage of by the Kauravas. But in the end, who won? The Pandavas. And yet, Kunti Devi prays, I would rather be in the position of losing and we were always remembering you when you were always present with us, then in a position of victory. Ultimately. And they could not have lost either without Krishna's favor. So that's the point that's being made. It's not an easy one to accept, but it's the point that Krishna is behind everything. And the devotee sees Krishna's favor behind everything. Whether we like it or not, victory or defeat. Krishna's mercy is coming in this way. Okay. Prickenrath, cursed to die. He said, okay. Vichasura, killed. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that was Krishna wanting to bring him back quickly to him. What to do? All we can do.
Surrender.
Yes. And why does one surrender? Because one realizes one has no choice. So one surrenders, okay, all right. You're in charge. You're the Supreme Lord. I'm just a tiny little insignificant fellow. Okay.
Why was Bali Maharaj still a demon? His grandfather was Prahlad.
It's just a matter of the family he was born in.
Don't have a choice.
He's born in a Surik family. So
two dynasties, one coming from Sura and Asura.
But he didn't have a demonic mentality.
So he's forced in, he knows better, but he's forced in position.
That's what they do. They fight the demigods, they have their enemies.
He's got no choice, it's his job.
That's the nature of his family. Just like
he's the king. But they're not. He wasn't an asura by nature, but his occupation was an asura.
It's hard to understand it.
Huh? Your occupation? I didn't think you had one right now. Oh, no, you're not. You're just working in the gardens and everything. What are you talking about? It's pure.
Yeah. I was able to change.
Yes.
He does change.
But no, but what did you change? And why did you change? Which changed first? Your consciousness, and then your activities changed. So his consciousness changed, but his activities externally, in a general way, didn't change. Now why is the question.
If you know better.
No, it's not a matter of knowing better. It's a matter of why didn't he change externally. It's Krishna's desire. because for one reason he wants to show. Krishna wants to show that regardless of your birth, you can be a devotee. It doesn't make a difference. Because asura, it's a dynasty, it's a mentality. Because it's not that your body doesn't dictate the kind of body you have and the kind of birth you have doesn't affect your mentality. Very much affects your mentality, but Krishna consciousness is so strong it can change that, the process of Krishna consciousness. So regardless of the particular asuric birth that he had, his consciousness was changed due to the association of Prahlad Maharaj. But his activity didn't change because he was the king of the demons. And look, Narada Muni just told the demons how to resuscitate themselves by going to Sukracharya. So Bali Maharaj will come up again. It just has to go on. It just has to go on, the fighting between.
Because Prahlad Maharaj was in that family and he was all the time saintly, yet the dynasty was still existed and he didn't exist within that dynasty. He was already a liberated soul. So how a liberated soul can save a demon?
Well, it's just, but it means asura. It means daitya.
But it's just his influence. He could influence. Prahlad Maharaj was able to influence his classmates. Why could he not influence his own offspring, his grandson?
He did. He did. That will be explained. No, but what? That was the point. His consciousness was changed, but his activities were the same.
What? Believe something and act in a different way. One would believe.
He didn't fight with Vishnu. He surrendered to Vishnu. He fought with. He had the chance to fight with. He had a chance to speak truthfully to Indra. Like Vitrasura also spoke similar words to Indra, and Indra just accepted them. Why did Vitrasura fight Indra? He was exalted devotee. Why did he fight Indra? Even Indra recognized him as a. Because that's what he was meant to do, so he did it. That's why he was put on earth, so he did it. That's what it seems. I read something where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that, I was looking for the quotation today and I wasn't able to find it. He said, the subtle seeming contradictory things in Krishna consciousness aren't easily understood until one is deeply realized. But there are so many things that you understand now that you didn't about Krishna consciousness, even that you probably didn't understand 10 years ago.
So take it on faith.
No, but not blind faith. But everything is based on faith. But even that is based on faith. What we can perceive, we conceive to a degree. I mean, to a percentage. You sit down on the floor, and just because you sat down on the floor 3,725 times previously doesn't necessarily mean beyond a doubt that the floor is not going to cave in. But you don't consider that when you sit down. You sat down on that mat, but you don't even know there's a floor underneath that. It might be just like a big hole and they just put the mat. Devotees have been known to do things like that, just cover it up. But faithfully you sat down. So it's not only in Krishna that we're asked to have faith, but just to live you have to have faith. It's true. Did you want to make comment?
I see this model there for the Guru Raja to change, fighting under the Dharma Drishti when he was king, at the next of house of Christ. And at that time, there's one great king that's called Moidas.
Called?
Moidas.
Moidas?
Moidas. 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 And she had two sons, that's called Rohit and Sula. As a great devotee, Krishna hired them. That time was originally Senapati, that's called the military army that formed.
Senapati means general.
Yeah. And that time was not hired, but not possible to kill to Suratan Prabhu. Because a great devotee, after Suratan Prabhu said, you can Uday Krishna, you cannot hide from him. Uday Krishna.
Without Krishna.
Uday Krishna, you cannot hide. You can pray to Krishna after fight possible to keep coming. And that's what we do. And many just came, many armies just came over Jadav and so many things. That was not possible to fight because it's so strong. After that time, Arjuna fight again. But Arjuna everything lose. After that time, calling to Krishna and Krishna came. And Krishna that moment, he has a problem. Just now, the Jogu sacrifice and Brahma and Krishna. And that time, Krishna came. And Krishna came. And Krishna giving the donation to Arjuna, and Arjuna killed to the other Chandra, that's what Krishna have. And killed the Prabhupada and Sura. And that time, Prabhupada and Sura will die. And that Murtha's wife, that they accept. And that time also they bomb the giving to one arrow, that's called one arrow. And that's and killed to Arjuna. And Arjuna is his head, at the chop. Doesn't flow. And that time the Gopalban killed.
Who?
Gopalban, that's Arjuna's aunt.
Yes, Gopalban.
That's what Mahabharata said in there.
Yeah.
And one time before the Mahabharata beginning to start, and Krishna go to the Patalo, down to Ram, and that was him one son there. That's called him, and that's called description of his name. And the title goes, and she made one arrow, and Krishna goes, and the name looks like polygram. So one is lesser, and two. And that when Krishna said, who is doing your here? And Vishwasana said, I see Alice and Krishna making this look at a pipe that looks like 18 days. That was not necessary this 18 days. Can I be possible this one day, kill everyone? And Krishna said, not possible. And Vishwasana said, yes, possible. And Krishna said, okay, you can make that one arrow and put him as look like, and put look like your one point. In the lot of cake.
One?
The twine looked like the red twine in the cake. And Vishwasana put arrows, and every arrow come back. And there's Krishna looking at the cake, and Krishna still didn't strike anyone red twine. And that's when Krishna made the sugar the cloth. And the cake looked at the observing this leg, head.
Bunky will explain everything later. And if Bunky can't explain it, Sahasra will explain it. And if Sahasra can't explain it, Alan will explain it. Without having read any of the book, he will be able to explain it in his own way. Yeah? Yeah? Very good.
Movies and all that, there's a very, very elaborate sort of references to so many things you have not heard.
Yet, we've not heard. Die.